Okay.
So we can switch to the next presentation, given by Chris Guimard. Family with Windows computers. So
I think it's this one.
This
yeah,
one. It looks like.
Yeah. Well, I'm not familiar.
No, it isn't. It's working. Yeah, perfect.
Thank you. Well, we've been talking about clouds a lot these last few days. I would like to switch a little bit to the clear sky situation and specifically the aerosol contribution to solar radiation. And first of all, I would like to thank a lot my co-author, Jose Antonio, here. He did most of the legwork, so this presentation owes a lot to him. So the background is that all the surface irradiance components are needed in many applications, solar resource assessment, solar forecasting, you name it. So there are many uses, and we have to be to distinguish between the surface irradiance needs for these applications compared to the meteorological applications, where usually you need also the vertical profiles of irradiance. So here it's only about surface. The accuracy of the irradiance predictions depend on two things. First, the model itself. If it works correctly under all circumstances. And second, the input data quality. So the two things sometimes are tied, and it's sometimes difficult to differentiate between the two sources of errors. And if you look at the literature about clear sky radiation modeling, you will find a lot of such models. And with very large range of spectral resolution and other features. Some are very complex, some are very simple. We know that for highly repetitive calculations, and let's talk about continental applications like what Yuzi presented a few hours ago, we need a fast model. This is also true, of course, for forecasting. Now, high spectral resolution may be desirable for some applications where you need actually spectral information, but it also means it's a slower model. What we know about clear sky irradiance is that it's a strong function of aerosol, and especially AOD, the aerosol optical depth. And AOD is a spectral function itself. We also know that DNI, the direct normal irradiance, is about 4 to 5 times more sensitive to AOD, the errors in AOD, than GHI under clear conditions. So obviously, DNI is like the way to go if you want to look at the influence of aerosols on surface radiation. So considering all this, I would like to talk about three different questions and try to answer them. The first one is, does higher spectral resolution in a model improve its performance? Number two, what is the exact role played by aerosol conditions on this model performance? And three, what is the impact of cloud filtering method when applied to the experimental radiometric data? Usually, we need to define clear sky conditions based on measurements, and we need to do this a posteriori after the measurements were made, and we don't know if it was cloudy, if it was partly cloudy, if it was clear. So we need to find a way to determine if it was really clear. And there are different ways to do that. So for this contribution, we selected 10 models from the literature for different reasons. maybe some of you know that I've been working on a lot on these kind of things in the past. So previous validation studies, importance of these models in solar or meteorological applications, and the very recent literature. All these models are actually dependent on aerosols with two different factors, the aerosol particle death and the angstrom exponent. The angstrom exponent is a way to evaluate the spectral variation of AOD over the wavelength range of interest, which is the short wave here. So this is the list of all the models that we considered. And some of you will certainly recognize the BIRD model. It's a very classic, simple radiative transfer model that has been used a lot in solar applications. The Inaishan model, which is a broadband parameterization of the spectral SOLIS model from DLR, I'm correct, or DWD. LDRTM is a new model that is actually in a beta version. At this point, it's not published yet, but it's from the same team as from Italy, those people who developed the AMESIS model. And it's so it, that one uses 461 wavelengths, so a lot more. It also uses Diesel 16 stream solver, which means it's extremely slow. The Modify MAC, the MAC model was a Canadian model developed a long time ago and modified it some 12 years ago. And it's basically the simplest, fastest model we can imagine. It's probably just four equations. REST2, which I developed some time ago, and in this case, it's a two-band model, visible and near-infrared, the two latest versions of it. RRTMG is a two-stream model used, for example, in WRF, so it's an interesting comparison to do. It has 14 bands in the shortwave. It uses a two-stream solver, and it's also multi-layered vertically. SMARTS, which is my spectral model, and it uses a lot of wavelengths, 2000, which and we use the latest version 3 beta. SOLEMI is the DLR version of the BIRD model, a single band. SunFlux is a new model from Australia. I tested it some time ago last year based on the publication from Dr. Sun, but there were problems. Very important problem, so I wrote to him. I said, could you fix this? And that's exactly what he did. So this is the new version, updated version, that we tested here. This is also a two-band model. And finally, a little bit different is MacClear from Europe. It has a single band if you want, but it is based on spectral simulation from the Lieb-Rathjen model, which uses a lot of wavelengths. And it is different from the other ones in the sense that here it is tied to the MAC aerosol data and the MAC atmospheric data. So in this case, this is the only model that we use with, which we cannot use with actually local RNN data, for example. It comes as a service. You download the data from the website, but you cannot control the inputs. So in this case, we actually test the model and input data combined. So between the modified MAC and LDRTM, there's about a 4 to 5 orders of magnitude difference in speed, which is obviously means seconds versus days of calculation. So experimental data we used, only 1 minute data from BSRN stations, three thermopiles. We did some additional QC using the Chuck Long's method that is used for BSRN, comparing the direct diffuse and their sum to the measured global. And in this case, we use the direct plus diffuse as the reference global rather than the measurement, because this is the optimal way to do that. And finally, we get 15 combined BSRN ARRONET stations over five continents. And we see that here on this map. The map is actually the annual DNI from NASA. So for all models except MacLear, the main inputs, meaning aerosols, water vapor, the inputs are provided by coincident ARRONET measurements within 1 minute. And so we kind of have a portrait of very high resolution simulations. Now, we have two different philosophies as far as the clear sky conditions are involved. One is the traditional cloudless sky conditions, where you try to avoid any cloud at all in the sky hemisphere. And that is typically used to test global and diffuse. We can also test direct, of course. In this case, we use the traditional long Ackerman filter, where you use your three components and you try to decide if it's clear or cloudy. Now there's another possibility, which is the clear line of sight. And for that, we try to save only the circumstances where the sky is visible, but there could be clouds everywhere else. So this is only to test DNI, of course. And in this case, the ARRONET filter provides us with those circumstances. So obviously, the cloudless conditions are much more restrictive. It happens much less often. And on the other hand, if you are trying to validate DNI models or DNI predictions to compare with, to use for applications like concentrators, CSP, CPV, those applications will work under cloudy conditions if the sun is visible. So this type of validation will be actually better for such circumstances. We have to be cautious about different things. The sun photometer opening angle, which is smaller than that of pyrheliometers, and 1 minute average irradiance versus instantaneous data from the sun photometer. And sometimes within a minute, some clouds can be passing. So we have to be careful about this. The results for GHI, global irradiance, show relatively reasonable results, especially at clear sites like here in Boulder. Dusty sites like Sidi Boker in Israel, it's a little bit less obvious. So maybe it could be due to the models. It could be also due maybe to soiling. But in general, what we find is that the simple modified MAC model, SMARTS, MacLear performs similarly at many sites. But we also find that there is very strange results at three of these BSRN sites, Petrolina, São Martinho in Brazil, both, and Sioux Falls in the US, and for all models. So this is strange. So we'll look into that later. DNI results, obviously a little bit less obvious, even at clear sky like Boulder. For Sidi Boker, again, we can compare the two different definitions of clear sky, so the cloudless in pink and clear line of sight in yellow. So the performance will vary between those two. MacLear, in this case, is underperforming, and LDRTM too. and they might be impacted by high IoT in this case. And we find also this same kind of troubling underperformance at those three sites. MacClear is usually underestimating at most sites. Now, what I will try to insist on is this analysis of those 15 sites where you have the GNI percent error on the y-axis, and on the x-axis is the product of the air mass by the AOD at 1 micron, which is the angstrom beta. So normally, well, first of all, why beta, m-beta? It's a measure of the total aerosol extension along the slant path. And at City Broker, the dusty site here, well, surprisingly, the simplest model, MMAC, performs much better than the very sophisticated LDRTM. So that was totally unexpected. We can also hopefully see that. Does it work? Maybe not. Okay, Izana is another case. Normally it's high elevation, so normally the AOD is quite low, except when it receives dust from the Sahara. So we have center plot there, where we see Solemi and MacClear going in a bad direction. But usually most models are correct. So the question is low resolution, like one band model versus high resolution. Why do we have this mixed results where simple models can actually perform better than very sophisticated models? I think this is an important question, and this is certainly related to the fact that the spectral AOD variation is relatively smooth. So since AOD is the major contributor to DNI, adding more spectral information and resolution doesn't necessarily improve the model. And actually, it's sometimes even counterproductive. So what we have learned? First of all, AOD and the angstrom exponent may vary very fast during a single day. So using daily data might not be enough for validation studies. This is an example here for City Broker during a single day, and everything varies very fast. Can we really extrapolate Angstrom's law beyond, for example, 1 micron? We don't know exactly. And we also found sometimes problems for low AOD conditions, like here in Boulder, when AOD is below 0.02, for example, which is very close to the experimental uncertainty in the sun photometer, we might have negative values of AOD and very strange behavior of the spectral variations of the spectral AOD. Now, is it really only a single day of such things? Unfortunately not. We have, for example, the whole 14 years of data at Boulder, where we see some strange periods with very high alphas, or very negative alphas, and even very negative AOD. So in other words, more QC is necessary for AeroNet data. The good models should normally have negligible bias when M beta tends to zero, but for those three sites, the three outliers, it's not the case. So why? My feeling is that it's not the sun photometer problem or not the model problem. It's most probably the pyrheliometer bias, like calibration, shading, and so on. So we have a significant impact. Apparently the figure has disappeared. Significant impact of the cloud filtering method. And four models actually can withstand very high AODs. and not the other ones. Actually, three are diverging beyond some value of AOD, which is a problem, whereas the modified MAC stays highly accurate. Some future work we want to do, or we have already started actually. Quality control, very important for both BSRN and RNet. More stations we could do. How accurate is the angstrom exponent? Evaluate the joint impact of AOD and alpha on model performance. This is a preview of this. So DNI percent error on the y-axis versus beta. And test more models. Jim Dudia's in the WRF model, the Goddard model in WRF again. And about this, it appears that the Goddard implementation in WRF might have problems, so be careful about it. And the Zhang model used by NASA. So 10 models, 15 sites, good consistent results for GHI, DNI, obviously more problems. Powerful analysis tools is this bias versus the M beta product. Three sites, surprisingly, have problems. And definition of clear sky has to be looked into a little bit more, I think. And the simplest model performs much better than most sophisticated models. That was really the surprise. So we need to look into this a little bit more, and especially at those sites where we have low AOD, because then we don't know exactly what happens. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris.
I was wondering about the sample sizes on some of the, like the cloudless versus unobscure line of sights on. Could in some situations the sample size cause a bit more variability and uncertainty in the statistic?
Well, that's exactly the figure that wouldn't show would have given that information to you. So yes, it's okay. To me, it's a question of sampling. When you have obviously much more cases with a clear line of sight, it behaves much better. But when M-beta is low, the two things agree very well. Now, the question is beyond some limit, the clear line of sight method can give you more information.